Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
Welcome to a very, I don't know, multiversal episode of Still Watching. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair Hollywood correspondent Anthony Bresnikan.
Wow, I'm finally like breaking you down where you can say your title without feeling any kind of awkwardness around it. I love it. We are here to talk to you about Marvel's animated series, What If? We got a lot of requests to do this series. We're not doing the whole season, but Bresnikan and I are here to talk about up through episode 2. And sort of just our thoughts about how the series as a whole fits into what Marvel is wanting to do right now in its storytelling. We just thought it would be fun to hop on a call and do one more trip around the Marvel multiverse.
We can also do a little what if about what if too, because I have a nice little interview with head writer A.C. Bradley and Brian Andrews, the director of the episodes, talking about all the storylines they pitched or considered, but didn't do. And I thought that was, I had a blast talking to them about that. So if you're up for that, Joanna, maybe at the end we could hit some of those highlights.
Oh my God, I loved that piece. I would love to do that. Also, I love when I'm reading a Wikipedia page and one of my friends' articles or whatever is sourced. Your interview with them is sourced in a section on the Wikipedia page. And I was like, oh, I already knew that because I read Bresnikan's article. Anyway, here we are to talk about What If. Mm-hmm. If you are just joining us for the first time on Still Watching, what a wild time to join us. But what we do on this show is each week, either Richard Lawson or Anthony Bresnikan joins me, or sometimes both, joins me to talk about a show that we're sort of watching obsessively. We're in a little in-between summer period right now. Usually we go episode by episode, but with schedules and summer TV being what it is, we're sort of doing some of these one-offs. So Richard and I just did an episode last week about White Lotus. This is our What If episode. And then next you hear from us will be Nine Perfect Strangers. And then we're going to get back into the regular swing of things, starting with American Crime Story Impeachment, a very Vanity Fair show. So so that is a state of Still Watching right now. Just a couple more weeks of summer programming and then the fall will kick off in earnest. So that is where we are. Excited to talk to you about this. And I think, I mean, a reason why we decided not to go week to week with What If is it, I mean, I'm enjoying it, but I will say it doesn't feel quite the same as one of the live action Marvel Disney Plus shows, and that's not even a criticism, that's just sort of my vibe around it. How are you feeling around it, Anthony?
Yeah, I feel it definitely doesn't feel like the typical show. I mean, it's animation and each episode is a one-off. I think it's definitely priming people to understand, to fully grasp what it means to have a multiverse now that that has been unlocked with Loki. And you know, one of the things that A.C. Bradley and Brian Andrews told me was that they were directed to stay away from Falcon and Winter Soldier, Loki, Wanda, and Vision, because they had their own TV shows. And so you know, this is picking up, I think, a lot of threads that would never be pursued, except maybe in a comic book. I mean, the What If comic series is pretty legendary. But I'm liking it. I like where it goes. I like the idea that this is a place to experiment and take some risks and still have it be, by means of the multiverse, part of the official storytelling.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
I don't think What If is as enjoyable if you're not already up to speed on the MCU, because you appreciate the flavors in a dish that are unique and a different way of cooking it when you've had it the same way or a similar way over and over again. It's like, oh, is there cinnamon in this crust? Like, oh, okay, great. It's different.
That's a great way to describe it. Yeah, no, I both agree and disagree. I definitely agree that, especially with the first episode, which is, you know, was actually my least favorite of the three that I've seen, not because I don't love Captain Carter, because I do, and I'm thrilled to see her sort of centered in the narrative of all of this, right? They've already talked about how she's going to be in season two. There are rumors that there might be a live action version of Captain Carter sort of cameoing in Multiverse of Madness. You know what I mean? Like, Captain Carter feels like a big thing that they want to sort of go all in on. But the first episode, and I think intentionally so, is kind of doing beat for beat Captain America First Avenger, yeah. Right? It's doing the movie. Whereas the second episode I liked much more for my personal taste, because it's just doing a heist, like a different riff using these characters. And I think that's a slow intro into what we're, you know, like, let's hit them with something, a storyline they're familiar with. Let's just do First Avenger, but swap some roles around. And now we can sort of get a little loopier as we go. But I want to say, so I agree with you that obviously things are enhanced. Your understanding of What If is enhanced if you understand the stories that it's in conversation with. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, in episode two, Yondu becoming sort of a Robin Hood-esque figure because of T'Challa's influence versus, you know, what happens in the films, etc. However, I do also think that because it's not locked into the continuity of the other stories, I think there is a barrier of entry and intimidation factor for people who just want to start the MCU nowadays, because it feels like there's so much homework they have to do to understand anything. And there is some freedom in these stories in that if you choose to, you could just take them at face value for what they are.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, you definitely can wade into it and just sort of roll with it. I think you lose a lot if you're not up to speed. Like, and in the Peggy Carter episode, Captain Carter episode, I completely agree. To me, is like almost like a template that they're laying down. Like, this is what we're gonna do. I enjoyed that episode quite a bit, and I thought it was really well done. But you're right; it's not as free. It's not as wild as and surprising as the What If T'Challa Became Star-Lord storyline. You know, it's but I think you have to acclimate your audience to what you're doing, and I think that was a good way of wading into it. And you know, what we know about the upcoming episodes that have yet to air, they're going to get a little more far-flung too, and a little more avant-garde in their approach to remixing the known MCU. But I just really adored this T'Challa episode. I love that Nebula calls him Cha-Cha. I think it shows like he's much more laid back and casual in this one. And you know, the character of T'Challa was raised, I think, with a certain formality as a prince, and then, you know, because his father knew that he would have to become a king someday, and so you can't be as laid back as maybe Shuri is, because you're in line to the throne in a way that she's not. And you know, here he's raised by the Ravagers, and he's a much more casual dude and lighthearted. I remember interviewing Chadwick Boseman when he was first playing Black Panther in Civil War, and he said he is not the one who cracks jokes. You know, Black Panther, you like him, he's cool, he can be funny, but he's not the wisecracker. And I guess in this version of him, we get that the wisecracker, the guy who's willing to take a joke and roll with the joke and make a joke himself. But all of the other variety, too, the fact that Nebula has this flowing Veronica Lake hair, which actually serves a plot purpose. I was like, oh, that's cool, you know, because she's bald and kind of fearsome, and this makes her a little bit more femme fatale, I guess, of the classic film noir variety. But then the fact that she's not a cyborg in this, but she pulls back the hair, and we see that little bit of cyborg activity around the eye that's familiar, and that was placed there in some sort of past hostile encounter with the Collector. I really dug that. So the hair not just served an aesthetic difference in where you feel like this is variety, and it's a callback to a certain kind of character from film noir, from film history, but it also serves a plot point. I thought so many of those things were well done. The way Thanos is, he you know, the line, not angry, mad, and then he turns around and charges the Collector's forces. Does that remind you of a moment from Marvel past?
Tell me what you're thinking of.
When Bruce Banner in The Avengers.
that's my secret, Cap.
Yeah, it's my secret. I'm always angry. Like, and then he turns around and charges them, like, you know, mad, angry, you know, it's sort of like, but it was the same action beat.
It was a great line, too.
Yeah.
Not, you know.
Yeah, it was a great line.
Not crazy. Mad, the Mad Titan. And, I was glad that they dropped in that sort of Mad Titan reference earlier for folks who might not know that that's what he's called.
Just beautiful, beautiful exposition in this. Really great the way they Chekhov gunned this episode. Like, everything you needed to know, you were given that information, and like, it was set up beautifully.
I also like the way that they worked in sort of the emotional crux of the First Guardians, at least for Star-Lord, the idea of chosen family, and then this idea of Yondu betrayal, all that sort of stuff is still worked in here. It's just different, a different story of that.
I guess they wanted to have their ending where T'Challa does come back and reunites with his family. But I thought it initially when he said, oh, yeah, we went back and Wakanda was destroyed in a war. I thought the twist was going to be that because T'Challa was taken and the king of Wakanda, T'Chaka, right? I assumed it was going to be that Wakanda was left vulnerable because T'Chaka had directed so much effort outside of planet Earth to find his son, that they were left vulnerable to colonization or attack. And so that's sort of darker version of this I was expecting. But of course, no, it just turned out to be a lie. But I kind of thought that's where it was going. Did you think that, or the only one?
I don't know. I don't know if I had that thought, but I that would have been an interesting story. I wonder what if that had happened. I wanted to zoom back to a couple things you said. First of all, about this idea of how this show. I always think that the metaphor it always comes up, and it's more violent than what I really want, is the frog in the pot of water and sort of slowly turning up the heat to the boil. Thinking about the way in which Marvel, when it all started with Iron Man, what non-diehard comics readers were acclimated to in terms of superhero storytelling, which was mostly, you know, like Superman and Batman and Spider-Man, etc., versus what slowly Marvel Studios, with a big assist, I think, in 2018 from Sony, what they have done to get all of us in a place where we can consume a comic book storytelling in this way. We talked about this a little bit with a TV series, but I mean, like when I've talked to Kevin Feige about this before, about I was asking him if he thought the MCU was patterned after television, you know, like each movie is an episode. And he's like, no, it's more like comic books. Like comic book storytelling is always our guide. It's just what the audience is ready for. And so, like, you get the audience ready for weirdness with Guardians of the Galaxy, and the slow roll they've done to get audiences ready for the concept of a multiverse. Again, I think Sony's Into the Spider-Verse in 2018 played a huge part in helping get us to understand. And by us, I don't necessarily mean me, but sure.
The collective folks, us. We, yeah, I get you. The
get audience. Folks who Mainstream aren't audience. Fully on... Yeah, get folks who aren't fully on board to not be so intimidated by something that has been intimidating in comic books, where the continuity, right? Or runs that restart, or all these sort of things. And so just get you on board with the idea of like, oh, yeah, sure. There, you know, in this reality, T'Challa is this, or in this reality, Peggy Carter is this, and that's okay. And it doesn't disrupt our understanding of who Peggy Carter or T'Challa were in these other stories we saw. And I think that's been, Marvel under Feige and other people, not just Feige, has always been so good at the patient slow roll. Do you know what I mean? Like, just really not getting ahead of themselves and just have faith in Marvel that they will get to where they need to go. You know what I mean? I just think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. You know, if I can rewind the clock way, way, way back to 1989, as a kid, like 13 years old, watching Tim Burton's Batman, like right around the age where you start going to the movies by yourself rather than with like your parents or a grown up, you know, like go with your buddies, go with your friends to watch a film. And so that year was a big movie going year for me, a big memorable time in my life. And I remember seeing Tim Burton's Batman and being like really blown away that Jack Nicholson's Joker died at the end, because I was used to the 60s TV series. I was used to comic books where the villain gets thwarted, maybe gets captured, but not only does he not die, but he usually gets away, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, whoa, like, they killed the Joker. They just introduced this to him, and they killed him. And, you know, the Superman movies, Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor, like, kept turning up again and again. So I was really shocked by that, and that became a kind of template for superhero movies, is that you would have a hero versus a villain, and the colorful villain would die in the end, or be destroyed, or be... whatever, neutralized permanently in some way. And the notion that that there's a continuation here, that these were not complete standalones. Like, you might get a sequel, but it's going to be a different villain. It's going to be a different story. I think Marvel really changed that template, which existed for then 20 years. And said, okay, well, maybe, you know, instead of killing Justin Hammer, we're going to have him, he's going to be jailed, but he might turn up in a short film, he might turn up again. We're going to keep things going a little longer, and occasionally kill off the bad guy, but mostly, especially...
Put him on ice. Put him on ice.
Yeah, have him come back. Even Red Skull, you know, was...
Yeah.
In that early MCU, they were still doing that. Like, everybody thought Red Skull was dead, except for me, I thought... He didn't really die. He just got, like, beamed out, you know?
I love this. You're like, these many years later, you're like, for the record,
I was right. I really didn't believe it. I was like, oh, no, Red Skull's coming back. Like, he's going to come back in some way. Because he didn't die. He just got beamed out. And so I think they're doing that now. You know, they're changing the cadence of what we expect from storytelling and going back to the comic book way of, to borrow a line from the Star Wars universe, no one's ever really gone.
Yeah, in Marvel, that feeds into the next point I wanted to make, actually, which is, not only is no one ever really gone in the way that, like, you know, Catherine Hahn can be rescued from suburbia, where, you know, Agnes was put at the end of WandaVision anytime they want to use Catherine Hahn again, but What If offers them something even bigger, which is that characters who they did kill, like Killmonger, can come, you know, and like, I think about, a lot of people talk about this. Killmonger dies at the end of Black Panther. It is a tremendously powerful moment. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible moment in the film. And yet, a lot of us watching it are then bummed that we don't get any more of Michael B. Jordan's great performance in that character. And then Marvel comes along and says, what if we do? And it's all under that umbrella of something that I talk about a lot that I would like to introduce as a branded concept in this podcast, which is I've started capitalizing it. Feige can fix it. Feige can fix whatever question marks, I don't even want to say mistakes, but sort of like regrets, maybe faint regrets or big regrets that they have.
They can retcon it using what if.
But it's not quite a retcon, is it?
So,
you know what I mean? It's another bite of the apple. And like the same thing is true of Peggy Carter, right? There's a lot of stuff in Captain Carter. Well, I'm thinking of like Bradley Whitford's inclusion specifically, but like there's stuff in the Captain Carter episode that feels a lot like Agent Carter, which, by the way, wasn't a Marvel Studios, quite exactly a Marvel Studios production, right? Agent Carter, they wanted to use Haley. They loved Haley's performance as Peggy. We all love Haley's performance as Peggy. A lot of people love that show, but I don't think you could call it an unqualified success. It was canceled kind of abruptly. You know what I mean? So they're like, well, what if instead we give you a lot of Captain Carter, therefore we can still use Haley. We love her. And Feige can fix it. Feige can fix, you know, what happened with Agent Carter. I don't know. It's just something I'm thinking about. What do you think?
I agree completely. I mean, the other thing, so they give us Killmonger back. They can give us Thanos again as a good guy. But they can also kill off characters who endure. Like, one of the neat, shocking things of this episode with T'Challa is that when the Collector opens up his weapons cabinet, he's got Captain America's shield and Thor's hammer in there too. So something happened to those guys. He's got Hela's headdress and her little death. What's he call it? The death sword. I forget the exact name of it. So like characters that lived are heroes. They can be destroyed. And it got me thinking in terms of the multiverse. So like Abomination is in Shang-Chi. But it got me wondering about that Incredible Hulk movie with Ed Norton. You know, they recast that part. They put Mark Ruffalo in it. Could Ed Norton's take on the character be a what if? Like, could they say, oh, yeah, you remember that movie from way back? That was the multiverse, man. Mark Ruffalo is the canon. The canon Bruce Banner. Could they do a what if that shows us?
Here's what I will say.
Bruce Banner with Mark.
There is some, without spoiling anything, I've seen a little bit more of What If than you have. And I will say there is a connection to that movie beyond what we've seen from Thunderbolt Ross. I don't think Marvel will ever work with Ed Norton again. That is one of the only publicly burned bridges in the history of Marvel Studios, is what happened with Ed Norton. I do think that there are other opportunities there. And I think that's, you know, that's why they brought Thunderbolt Ross back in to begin with. That's why Abomination is here. They're doing a She-Hulk show. There is something upcoming in What If that plays with that, for sure. I think it'll be fun for folks listening who are watching the show to look out for those like Feige can fix it moments, you know what I mean. And once again, I don't want to attribute, like, there's a lot of people doing a lot of great work at Marvel. It's not just one man. I don't ascribe to the auteur theory, but it is a mentality of this one man who happens to hold, you know, the main keys to the kingdom here. And this idea, you know, basically the process, and I don't remember if AC talked to you specifically about this, but like, that they came up, I think, with like 30 pitches, and Feige picked the 10 scenarios that he liked best. So they're definitely, you know, like, there definitely is some taste making, you know, going on by Feige here. So, yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So do we want to talk about the what if of what if?
Yeah. Hit me.
Are you ready for that, or should we stick? Do we have any other?
No. Hit me with a what if of what if.
I was really intrigued by what those other 20 ideas might have been.
Yeah.
Some of them are being utilized as second season stories, so they wouldn't get into that with me. But the ones that I thought were the most intriguing were the ones that got nixed right away, ones that never even made it into that sort of that final round of consideration. And, you know, Brian Andrews said that his initial visual pitch, you know, he was a storyboard artist, or is a storyboard artist who's worked on a lot of Marvel projects. So he's been part of the Marvel family for a while. Mm-hmm. He did a kind of sizzle reel showing what if could be. And one of the first images was, you know, he said he knew he wanted to do like the Captain Carter thing, which is like a retro story set sort of at the dawn of the known MCU, set in the 40s, World War II era, Captain America era. They ended up doing Captain Carter, but he was like, initially it was going to be three heroes, back to back fighting all the Nazis. It was Cap, as we know him, with the super soldier serum. It was Peggy Carter, as we know her originally, not needing the super soldier serum to kick Nazi ass. And a third hero who is the Rocketeer, which is not a Marvel character mm-hmm. at all. Now, this was pretty quickly rejected by Kevin Feige, who was like, yeah, cool, no. But we watched The Rocketeer again last week, my kids and I and my wife.
It's a great movie.
And like, it's directed by Joe Johnston. It really does feel like a Marvel movie in some ways, because it feels so much like Captain America the First Avenger. And it's a great
movie. We should say, for folks who don't know, that Joe Johnston also directed Captain America the First Avenger.
Yes.
If someone's listening to this podcast and doesn't know that. Yeah. So the same person who directed The Rocketeer directed the first Captain America movie. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where they definitely hire Joe Johnston
for that vibe.
For the Rocketeer vibe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead. And like the idea that it's a Disney film and it's in the World War II era, like the idea that mm-hmm. you could just bring somebody in from another universe, I think probably there were legal complications there. Even though it's Disney, Rocketeer was not a Marvel. It was an independent comic, so I'm sure that they can't just have it. You can't just take it. But A.Z. Bradley said her idea was always pitch Star Wars. Like, when we had Luke Skywalker in there.
Yeah,
Which is an even bigger no. But I love that's where their brains... They were thinking... I think you have to think that far outside the margins before you close off, you know, in order to get... Just to loosen yourself up. And, other ideas she had was she wanted to do a young Indiana Jones-style story with Tony Stark and Howard Stark, his father. And so that sounded really intriguing to me, is what if Tony actually got to know his dad? It's because so much of his story is driven by not knowing who his father was or not really knowing what he was up to. Like, what if he figured it out early, what his dad was doing, and they had a clash? That would have been really fun to see. And she also wanted to do an Odyssey story with Homer's Odyssey, that is, where Pepper and Tony end up gallivanting through space and encountering a lot of the heroes from the galactic edge of the story, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Kind of a Romancing the Stone thing, if you think about that, like mm-hmm. that kind of vibe, the 1980s action romantic comedy thing. And I would have liked to have seen that. I think that could have been fun. I'm always down for a little more Pepper Potts and Tony Stark storytelling, because I think they are really good together. And it would have been neat to see her in the rescue outfit blasting through space.
I mean, the potential, I mean, we know that there's always already going to be a second season, but the potential for where they can go forward, I mean, maybe not to Luke Skywalker, maybe not to the Rocketeer, though I would love to hear Billy Campbell again, but is very vast. and getting ever vaster. Like, something that I think is interesting is the directive they were given was to use only characters that had already sort of debuted. So not to do Shang-Chi necessarily mm-hmm. or whatever. And not to do the Fantastic Four. Like, if you're don't hold your breath for the Fantastic Four being introduced in animated form here. That's not what Marvel's doing, but they are riffing with the toys they already have in their sandbox, which I think is really fun. I'm just been like daydreaming about sort of this like Feige can fix it attitude going forward. And like, I think it's either Benedict Cumberbatch or maybe just the What If creators had mentioned that a Doctor Strange centric episode was like a tragic love story. And we know that Rachel McAdams did a voice, and like Rachel McAdams and Doctor Strange has always felt like a huge wasted opportunity for me, for that actress. Like, completely wasted in that film. So like, is this an opportunity to give us a version of that character that feels like it matters much more? Stuff like that. Jimon Hounsou, fantastic in this episode too here. You know what I mean? And like, you know, they've used Jimon Hounsou in the MCU, but they haven't used Jimon Hounsou in the MCU the way that they did in this episode. So there's just like, there's all kind of opportunities.
I loved him as the fanboy. I thought that was a great twist on that character.
It was great. I was wondering, do you have any thoughts on the voice cast aspect? So let's, you know, for folks who don't know, let's run through really quickly that like, there are a lot of people, both major and small roles reprising, you know, their live action performances. Yeah, Carrie Coon doing like two lines in this episode.
Danai Gurira, major actors doing major actors and major characters, but doing bit parts in
right. Anime. And so, yeah, there are no small roles or small actors. But then you've got stuff like Dave Bautista claiming that he was not asked to do Drax for this episode, and then Marvel saying that must have been a miscommunication. I have some, like, at first I was working on a theory that they were only using actors that are going forward the MCU, and that's why Scarlett Johansson, Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans were not voicing their characters, but Brie Larson is also not voicing Carol Danvers. So I just think I have questions about who is and who is not reprising their live action role. Do you know what I mean? Do you have any thoughts on that? Is this a puzzle to you, or do you not care?
Whenever you hear, "Oh, must be a miscommunication," I think of that moment from the Ellen DeGeneres show.
Oh, Dakota Johnson.
Where Dakota Johnson. She's like, "You know, I wish I could have gotten an invite." Ellen, that's not true. Like, oh, must be a miscommunication, like,
right, or a scheduling issue. You know,
but
what
also,
I mean?
You and I have been doing journalism long enough to know that sometimes, like, representatives don't take things to the talent, right? It's like, oh, I would have gladly done that. I just didn't
very
know
true
you were doing it.
Very true.
So maybe that's what they mean by miscommunication: is the agent is like, no, baby, we can't do this unless we, like, you know, sir, five figures for the two lines that we're gonna read in the animated series. You know, it's their jobs to be gatekeepers in some way, but sometimes that probably gets in the way of projects. And so maybe that's what was at play, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Do you have any thoughts about what we know already is going to be in the series upcoming, and what else you're looking forward to?
I guess I'm looking forward to... I like when things change genres. Like, I've always wanted to see the Star Wars version of a horror movie. I've always wanted to, I'm down for like the Star Wars version of a comedy, you know what I mean? And I like to see what I always like about the Marvel universe is that they tend to at least somewhat graft a different genre onto some of their movies. You know, there was a lot of talk like that Captain America the Winter Soldier was like, that was like a 1970s paranoid thriller. I think that's a little bit true. I think that's true.
It's light
in the way that LaCroix is watermelon flavored. Like, it's sort of like, yeah.
Okay. First of all, as a LaCroix addict, I have to say that, how dare you? First of all, how dare you?
Yeah, it's not really a lot of flavor. It's like a whisper of a flavor. You know, like, it's a little bit of 70s.
Yeah, it's like the candy coating on an M&M.
You know,
for sure, for sure. Well, it reminds me of, Lucasfilm just put out the promo for their Star Wars anime that they're doing. Yeah. And that to me is leaning, or it makes me think about how Rogue One was supposed to be sort of like a gritty war movie. And then it was just like too gritty and too war. And they're like, let's just make it a Star Wars movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, they sort of steered it back towards the thing that they know works. So, I mean, I agree. And, you know, Marvel gets credit for when it gets weird, which it does sometimes, but you always want it weirder. And we're hearing some fun, or I always want it a little weirder. You know what I mean? And it's like WandaVision felt like fun and weird. And what I've heard about Multiverse of Madness, what Sam Raimi is doing, you know, Elizabeth Olsen told me, she's like, this is by far the scariest Marvel, you know, so the closest maybe we're going to get to a horror movie is the upcoming Doctor Strange movie. And that's interesting. And so I think that the more people respond to these experimentations, I mean, something that I kind of regret, something that they didn't decide to do with this that I think would have been fun, was do a different animation style for every episode. They were thinking about it and they decided not to do it. And I think it could have been really fun to, you know, that would have really helped sell the idea of different genres. You know what I mean? If to do the like sort of like the animation style they chose for the whole thing, I think works really well for Captain Carter, but for something like this, which is a little more noir, like, wouldn't it have been fun to do some like an animation style that's a little different? I think that could have been really fun.
Yeah.
What if they had done that?
I was like, remember that short Paper Man?
Yeah,
which had
exactly.
Like a kind of sketch feel to it, even though it was a lot of computer animation. Like I kind of would like to see that in a film noir approach.
Completely.
You know?
Completely. One of the upcoming episodes we know from the trailer again is a zombie episode with like the zombie Avengers. I'm really excited to see what that's all about.
I love the idea of like a horror version of the cinematic universe.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, like, I'm having fun with it, but again, it doesn't feel like essential or urgent Marvel television yet. I know that they have like everything that happens in it is canon, they have said. And, you know, there might be, like, I think if Captain Carter shows up in live action version and, like, say, Multiverse of Madness, it would be but a cameo. You know what I mean? Like, just a sort of glimpse of another universe or something like that would be my guess. But it doesn't feel, like, quite as urgent as some of the live action shows. And that's okay. It's not a knock on it. I'm just saying, like, I don't see it. It's not trending every week on Twitter the way that the other shows were. Is sort of this state of affairs with What If. And that's true of like all animated, even stuff that's like very popular, like the Lucasfilm animation that they did for years, that is canon, that connects to live action, doesn't ever feel quite as real to the wider audience as a live action property. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's an animation bias. I don't know, but interesting. All right, anything else you want to say about What If? What if you had more to say about it?
I think that kind of covers it for me. I'm sad for Korg in this episode. He, you know, the collector puts on this rock fist and reminds me of kind of like the gauntlets that they sell to kids in the department stores as a toy. Like he puts on this rock fist and punches out T'Challa and then says he got it from a... what does he say, like an extremely chatty, what's the species that Korg is? Cronin?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right.
That's what Korg was, right? So poor Taika Waititi's rock-based gladiator met his end and ended up becoming a gauntlet. Very sad for Korg. Pour one out.
And it's
him.
Also it's also a perfect, I mean, like, it's also a perfect venue for something like more Howard the Duck. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a perfect spot for this. It's a fun performance from Seth Green, and it's just sort of like, it belongs in this world in a way that it only mostly belongs in the live-action world, do you know? So, and in this world, the collector can be jacked. And the one thing we haven't mentioned that we should is, like, emotionally how it feels to hear Chadwick Boseman's voice again.
Oh yeah, very much so.
For me,
he sounds great, right? Yeah. He sounds healthy, and it's very heartbreaking. It's almost like you forget that he's gone, and then you get that title card at the end saying in memory of him, and it's like, oh, right.
Well, there's also that scene with T'Chaka where he's like, the hologram scene where he's like, you know, we will search for you everywhere in this realm or beyond. Do you know what I mean? That felt like a very meta. I don't know if it was added later or whatever, but like it felt like a very meta, like you're our brightest star. We will always be looking for you. Sort of thing. I teared up.
Yeah, that was very
John Connie's so great.
He is great.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, on that, I'm like starting to tear up. So that's probably means I should go. If you have any what if thoughts, I'd still love to hear them. You can always email us stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Otherwise, we'll be back with, Nine Perfect Strangers, the new Hulu show next week. Richard will be coming back for that. Anthony Bresnikan, where can folks find you if they want to?
You can find me typing away at vanityfair.com. I'll go. Please check out my What If story and share it if you're so inclined. I was really proud of that piece and all the alternate, I guess you call them dead ends that they tried to pursue. But I love that. I love hearing like who, you know, stories from classic movies of who was considered for the part. You know,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, so if you want to hear an alternate take on what if could have been, please search out that story.
Excellent. You can find me also at vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter @JoeRothis, and I will see you all next week.
And ponder the question. What if?
The Run Through with Vogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that.
We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOC.
Can you tell us what AWOC means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOC.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.